This is WBUR's All Things Considered. I'm Sharon Brody, in for Lisa Mullins. The Ding Ho restaurant in Cambridge had a short run as a comedy club, but it had an outsized influence on the careers of Boston comedians. And tonight, a flock of them, including many who went from Boston to national fame, will unite for a virtual tribute to the Ding Ho. Two of the comedians involved in the event are Bobcat Goldthwait, who was known for his screaming, unhinged act, and the event's host, Jimmy Tingle, whose comedy success in Boston led to a gig doing commentary on network TV. They say planning for the pandemic-era from-a-distance comedy show isn't all that different from the live in-person stuff.
It has been total chaos, horribly run, and hilarious. So it couldn't be a bigger tribute to the Ding Ho, because that's basically what a night at the Ding Ho was.
Our rehearsals are so seamless. Last night, it took us an hour to get 25 people on the call.
The event, featuring comedy and conversation, celebrates the 40th anniversary of the Ding Ho, and it honors the memory of the late comedian Barry Crimmins, who brought stand-up to the club. Funds raised from the virtual night of comedy will support Crimmins' wife, Helen, who's in treatment for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Goldthwait and Tingle told us the Ding Ho had a character all its own.
So the Ding Ho was originally a country western club where they had line dancing and country music. So like a cowboy bar that was a Chinese restaurant. You know, we had a wagon wheel. The wall was all wood. And some of the chairs were like, you know, swivel cowboy chairs. Jimmy, is that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate as of 79. The other side had Chinese wallpaper.
Yeah, that's true. And the main Ding Ho Comedy Club, though, was still a cowboy bar. Because I remember that time in Inman Square that there was a lot of cattle going on. A lot of shootings.
The Ding Ho Comedy Club only lasted about 5 years after Barry Crimmins started it in 1979, but every story about stand-up comedy seems to trace its roots back to the place. We asked Tingle and Goldthwait how that could be.
What made Barry special in Boston, anyway, was he knew what he was doing to a certain extent. He had been on stage, he had book clubs, but then you had all these people starting here, and you had the influence of Emerson, the influence of Harvard, the universities. So you got people like Stephen Wright and Paula Poundstone and Dennis Leary and
right. All those folks. And folks like Lenny Clark and Mike Donovan and Bill Campbell. And, you know, these guys had already started doing comedy, but Barry had the common sense to headhunt them and give them their own nights, start paying them more money than they were getting. It was a good petri dish because there was a big emphasis on being original and having your own voice. Not just like if you're a derivative stealing a joke, that's always bad news. But if your persona was even derivative of someone else, Barry would call you out. Barry would physically get up on stage and kick people off stage. Like I saw him at an open mic lay down on stage while this guy wouldn't get up. And Barry's going, say your last joke ever at the Ding Ho.
I can remember him telling me I was doing it about, I don't know, 3 months. And I was on stage and I did something, some joke that was derivative of Lenny. And he goes, that's Lenny Clark. Get your own Tingle. And he yells this out from the bar, you know, from the bar. And the next day, you know, I'm the daytime bartender. We're sitting there. He goes, listen, you got to go through your act with a fine tooth comb. And you got to weed out anything that is similar or remotely similar to somebody else's stuff.
It wasn't about your act being political like his, or, you know, him and Stephen Wright are best of friends, and their acts, you know, have nothing in common. But Barry just encouraged people to be original.
Back in 1982, Stephen Wright was essentially plucked from the Ding Ho to appear on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. Let's listen to a little bit of that.
This young man is from Boston. It's his first appearance on national television, and I think you're going to find him a little different. Would you welcome Stephen Wright?
And, you know, Stephen Wright could hardly wrap his head around how much of a career changer this would be for him and a major boost for Boston comedy.
I was Caesarean born. Can't really tell. Although, whenever I leave a house, I go out through the window.
And I mean, you know, on the show, Johnny Carson actually said a lot of comedians don't come out of Boston. And then, you know, from that point on, Boston was this nationally recognized stand-up hotbed. What did that moment mean?
Oh, it was really exciting to see, you know, first of all, everybody loves Steve. He's the sweetest guy. And so everybody was rooting and really happy for him. You know, this is a time before podcasts and before people having specials. There was gatekeepers, and so Stephen got the blessing from Johnny Carson.
It put us on the map, really, and it encouraged everybody else to work harder on their acts and dream bigger and think bigger, because Boston, one of the most surprising things was it was not an industry town. There were no agents. There were no managers. When that happened, everybody sort of took a step back and went, wow, it's really possible to maybe have a career doing this.
Yeah, well, you know, interesting. Definitely possible for some men. Some women did take the stage at the Ding Ho, but the world of stand-up, especially decades ago, was undeniably, it was a boys' club, it was a mostly white boys' club, and so much material that comedians relied on was racist, sexist, homophobic. And I wonder how it feels to be celebrating the history at a moment of such a reckoning with racism and bigotry and misogyny.
Well, that's a great point, and it's true. And the comedy scene reflected the times. Just like there weren't a lot of women in law or medicine or in politics or in other major industries, and African Americans and minorities and all those other industries, it was true in comedy. And the other thing is, if somebody was funny, at least in this town, they got stage time. Nobody said, oh, no, we're not having a woman on. Oh, no, we're not having a black guy on. Oh, no, we're not going to have a Hispanic person. If somebody, you know, was going to open mic night and was doing well and getting laughs, club owners wanted to book them.
And I think the misogyny and all that stuff is still so bad when you go to a place like the Comedy Store or the Improv, you know. I don't know what the solution is, but I'm excited that there's plenty of venues where other voices are being heard. But at the same time, there's plenty of people, and probably rightly so, who were offended by my persona and character. So here I am playing a guy who's clearly deranged, and we're laughing. So, and I'm on a high horse going, you guys are sexist.
But Bobby, it comes down to the intent. You know,
yeah, no, yeah, and I always felt like the persona that I was doing on stage was somebody that I actually cared about. I never felt like I was making fun of this person, you know. And I think that's where the anger came from on stage, because if I thought people were laughing at him for the wrong reason, I would get mad. How much is the therapy session?
We'll bill you later. Comedians Bobcat Goldthwait and Jimmy Tingle, thank you.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you so much. I think we only cursed once.
They're among more than a dozen comedians who will gather tonight for a virtual tribute to the Ding Ho Comedy Club in Cambridge, the man who founded it 40 years ago, and his widow, who's now fighting cancer. You can find out more and read about the history of the Ding Ho on the artery section of WBUR.org.